Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and we're back. Episode 1 of 2023, your DFS preview for this week's Century Tournament of Champions. We are moving. Sia Najad is here. Sia, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. My long love affair that I have every 4 or 5 months during football season is coming to an end slowly, and we're having this golf rebirth. By the way, it's an open relationship. I'm not cheating on anybody. This is really exciting. I can't wait.
I don't get what everybody likes about football.
That's got to be like sarcasm, right?
I mean, it's like kind of sarcasm. Yeah. It's like kind of a bit. I get what everyone's saying, but yes, it's true. For four months, football gets to be kind of the big boy that everybody talks about, but not so much anymore, Greg Ducharme, because it's Maui week.
It's not only Maui week, Rick, but this is so exciting. Like, I'm looking at this field, and I'm going through all the research and looking at all the players, and it's unbelievable. This is going to be from January, from this week, from right now until the FedEx, the Tour Championship. This is going to be a jam-packed year. And then after Tour Championship, we have Ryder Cup. It is so cool what we have going on this year. And it's starting off with probably the best tour, the best Century Tournament of Champions field that I can remember.
Well, I mentioned like we're back at it. That means 6 days a week. So I did some quick napkin math, Sia. I think over the next 252 days, we're going to produce about 216 episodes. Nearly every single day from now until, post Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And this is something we highlighted at the First Cut Podcast, almost not every show, but every so often we were like, hey, this is the only golf show that you're going to be able to see on a pretty much a daily basis. And I think that's a really unique feature here. We talk DFS today, we talk bets, we talk so many different things, including recaps after each day. I think this is really like a one-stop shop, which makes it a really cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah, so the cadence looks as follows. Mondays are your DFS previews. Tuesdays, those are your mega preview pods, your storylines, your betting previews, your one and done. Greg, we'll talk about that in just a second. And then after every single round, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or when we get to Torrey Pines and it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, round by round recaps. That's coming from very few places. I think the number of places that's coming from is one.
Yeah, and it is it's well worth it. It's so fun, and it's so amazing that there's real stuff to talk about every single time, right? It feels like a lot. You know, people ask me sometimes, you know, out on the street, people I know. These aren't
people
strangers.
Stop you on the street.
No, these are people I know.
Are you Greg Ducharme?
I tell them about it. And they say, no, it's not at any grocery store. I did go to the grocery store, by the way.
Whoa. What went wrong? How did you end up at a grocery store? What disaster occurred?
I'll keep this quick because we have a lot to talk about. But I pulled in. The parking lot
pulled out.
Was total mayhem. Okay. It was mayhem. I parked as far away as I could, and there were two spots next to each other. I like to park where there's no other cars around me.
Me too.
I will park far. I don't like to look for the closest spot. I park where I have the most space.
Preach,
also,
baby.
You got car seats, right? I got kid. I am door ding central if in a jam parking lot. So we go in. This is my one son was at camp. So it was three of us. And when you walk in the door of this grocery store, there was legitimately traffic, grocery cart traffic. And I was right as soon as you walk in, you could barely get in. And there's another way to go. Everybody's trying to go down the same. What are you doing? Go around, you know? So I dart around. We had to get like four things and it took forever. I said, I might never come back. I mean, this is
what you're describing over. Is why when I go to a PGA Tour event, I walk the course from 18 to 17 to 16 to 50 because everyone walks it in the other direction. What are these people doing?
I mean, you're all going the same way. Somebody's going to get hurt. Right. And you're not going to like, you can't move. There's nothing worse than unintentionally standing still. And the only thing worse is sitting still in a car. But lines are not for me. And
you bring up a good point, though, because a lot of people, sorry to cut you off, they go to the right. They start in the right where like the produce is. You don't need to do that. You can just swing a left and do, and like you'll see those aisles are kind of freed up. This is actually really good advice. Very good practical advice from Greg.
Nowhere else are you getting this mm-hmm. level of content. Also, I'm not sure I'm allowed to announce it or say it yet, but like we're gonna have some people on site at places this year, right? Remember, Greg, when we were at Brookline and how nice that was to look into each other's eyes and do a podcast?
How could I forget?
That's right. It was special.
We have one of those digital frames, and it's funny you mention that because there's a picture of you and I with our CBS microphones.
I love that.
And we're having a great time, and it popped up the other day. I'll never forget it.
All right. Well, we'll try to get as many boots on the ground as possible this year. Sorry, Sia.
It's all good. I'm a little jealous, though. I got
to
be honest.
That's all right. We'll figure out a way to make everything come together. Also, whew, boy, we got a lot to cover. So the one and done, the notorious, illustrious one and done, Sia, starts this week. So the fans, as they did last year, are going to be able to participate yet again. So what we'll do, I'm trying to get in contact with Elijah, who did the forms for us last year. It was very, very helpful and very, very handy. I'm hoping he is out there listening. Elijah, would you like to do the forms again? That'd be very nice. But we'll get those forms out. The fans can participate. We're all going to participate, Sia. And how about this? We have a second Kyle this year because the guy who won the auction for the spot in the one and done where the money went to St. Jude, I've made contact with him. His name is Kyle, and he's coming on the show tomorrow.
Wow. That is awesome.
Awesome.
How about that?
It's fantastic. What a cool thing that he did, by the way. And it's really cool also that was like an opportunity. Like it was something that was sought after enough to get into the one and done league to, you know, donate actual dollars to get in, which is really cool. So I can't wait to hear his thoughts tomorrow.
So lots of stuff obviously happening. The First Cut podcast, Twitter at First Cut Pod. You can get all the information. We'll obviously all retweet it and all that fun stuff and get it out there. But we're rocking and rolling. And the place we start, Sia, is Maui. 39 of the world's best here for the Tournament of Champions. Rory McIlroy not teeing it up, but we kind of knew that. Basically, everybody else is here. Producer Troy, if we could share my screen, that'd be splendid. Thank you. This is my website, rickrungood.com. Lots of golf data, lots of golf information. You should probably check it out. See, this golf course, very unique. You don't see many courses like the Plantation course at Kapalua.
Yeah, and it's like magical, right? It almost like from a scenery standpoint, it doesn't even look real. I think this is going to be, especially with the time zone issues, which I shouldn't say are issues, but I think this will be really cool to watch on multiple levels because of the time. And go ahead, Rick.
Trivia question. What time is it in Hawaii right now?
I'm guessing, but I'm going to go. Well, Greg, you go first while I stall.
11:42
what? Guess.
PM? Oh, no. I'm sorry. I have it backwards. It should be 11:42 a.m.
Okay. See ya.
I think he was close, Greg,
on this one.
I think he was closer on the first try. I'm going to go with 1:42 a.m.
You guys have no idea how time zones work.
First. Damn it.
Greg was much closer. Greg was assuming, and Greg was almost accurate because they are normally 3 hours behind the West Coast.
However, that's what I was thinking. I went 6 hours.
Here's the problem. They don't do daylight savings. So it is currently 12:42 p.m. Eastern time. They're 2 hours behind the West Coast, 5 hours behind the East Coast.
They don't do daylight savings?
No, Arizona doesn't do it either. You don't have to when it's just always sunny.
Yeah, I guess so. And in my opinion, you don't have to anytime. So Greg,
you're killing it today, bud, with the takes. I'm agreeing.
It's good to be back.
You're going to show up at the First Cut show at like 3:30 every time.
So the time zone issues are that it is going to be on basically prime time, Sia, on the East Coast, and we will then record the pods after that. So it's going to be later in the evening for those on the East Coast.
Yeah, and how cool. I mean, this, I think, from a just live betting and just watching, you know, because a lot of people, they have to wake up to, you know, what we're going to do on a normal, regular basis is they're waking up to golf that's already kind of been played. I think this will be really cool to be able to just kind of come home from work or whatever you do during the day and be able to watch golf in prime time. That's super cool.
The extreme nature of the Plantation course, Greg, when I say that, there's a couple of things that stand out. One, I'm showing the scorecard right now. If you're watching on YouTube, it's a par 73 with only three par threes. You don't see that very often. You also just get a lot of undulation, no flat lies. You get fairways that are as wide as football fields. You get greens that are like 8,300 square feet on average. You've got elevation. It just is like when you think of Maui, you don't say, oh, that's an extreme location, because it's not. It's awesome. It's perfect. Same thing every single day. But the Plantation course is like kind of extreme.
It is absolutely extreme. It is a dramatic walk. And you'll hear the players talk about this all week. And if you hear from any caddies, they'll tell you it's the hardest walk on tour, because it's not only extremely hilly, and much like in Augusta National, you're walking across slopes and up slopes and down slopes. There's also some long walks in between greens and tees. So it's a really big golf course in every imaginable way, right? It's big walks. There's some big force carries, which don't really come into play, but you're hitting over some gorges. There's some really cool shots, really cool scenery, and dramatic elevation changes off of uneven lies, which is really a fun way to play golf. There's a lot of different shots. The ball moves on the ground when it's firm, and it plays really long when it's soft. So look, they make a lot of birdies out here. It's a resort golf course. But it is definitely pretty to look at.
Yeah. So if you're looking at like the course key stats model on rickrungood.com, you're going to see a lot of those extremes played out in the stats here. Like it says strokes gained putting more important here than at any other golf course. Around the green, second most important. If you're tapping into your around the green play, you're in big trouble at this course. So you take this with a grain of salt, Sia. I think that to me, this is a second shot golf course. There's, you know, distance is fine, but like, as Greg mentioned, everything just kind of rolls out to some of the same spots. Accuracy doesn't really matter off the tee. Hit your second shots well, roll in some putts, see how many birdies you can make.
Totally. And so scoring stats are going to be big. Approach stats are going to be big. I do want to ask about driving distance though, because, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of rollout. It doesn't play as long as it sounds. But at the same time, when we look at leaderboards, and I saw somebody, it might have been PJ Splits, who tweeted about this earlier this morning, but talking about just looking at the leaderboards over the last few years. And I looked at them myself prior to reading this tweet. It did look like it was a lot of really long hitters, a lot of long bombers, if you will, that were inside the top 10. I mean, maybe I'm just wrong about that fact, but it seems to me that the bombers tend to do better than some of the shorter guys.
Without knowing what those leaderboards look like or anything like that, without in front of me, the problem with this event is you have to normalize all the data, because Greg, as I'm sure you're going to mention, these are like 39 of the best golfers in the world, and 39 of the best golfers in the world are generally longer than average. So you're going to get a lot of that. You've got to normalize for. So that's what I do. I normalize for all the fields and stuff like that. But I because this event can throw some really wonky stuff out there.
Yes, I totally agree. And Sia, you're not wrong. I go through, prior to the week, I look at the last 3 years and the top 10 players and try to get an idea of what they all did. And based on averages of everybody in the top 10, the driving stuff is definitely the most important. Like, the players are ranked the highest when it comes to driving distance and driving accuracy entering this event. So, and the other odd thing about it is you're talking about the fall. Some players haven't played a lot. Some players in some years haven't played at all. 3 years ago in 2019, you had half the top 10 didn't play an event in the fall. In 2020, on the other hand, you had major championships. It was a really good look. But the driver strokes gain off the tee and driving distance, those two things definitely play out to be the most important. But to Rick's point, so many of the guys in this field are really strong in that area, because so many of the guys that are strong in those areas win golf tournaments on the PGA Tour. So you kind of have to feel it out. But I would not look past distance, but I would also take it with a grain of salt.
To me, to put a bow, distance is always an advantage, right? No matter where you are, it's always an advantage. Some of the shorter hitters are going to have drives that are like 370 yards this week because they're just going to hit the right spot in the fairway. It's going to roll out to the bottom of the hill, et cetera, et cetera. So, I don't think it's never going to hurt you if you're long. Let's jump into some actual players here, and we'll go through tier by tier, 10Ks down to the 6K range. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Here's the cheat sheet. The $10,000 range, the price, if you go look at DraftKings, Sia, there's three golfers in the 10K range, but Rory McIlroy, obviously not teeing it up. I don't get me started on this. Scottie Scheffler, $10,300. John Rahm, $10,000. That's it. Two golfers. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, so this really just comes down to how you want to do your build. I mean, obviously, these are the top two golfers. I think with a tournament that's only, 39 deep now without Rory, is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay, so I mean, I think with 39 golfers, you really got to get a little clever. This is not your typical, it's not even your typical no-cut event, let alone cut event. So I like both of these guys. I mean, if I have to pick between the two, I think conventional wisdom would point you toward John Rahm. because he's just doing everything right. Whereas Scotty Scheffler, you do have something that you can criticize, and that is obviously the putter. Again, John Rahm, he's probably going to be a really popular play, and rightfully so. He checks every box. And I think this is, I might've mentioned this last time we were on, which again was probably like 4 or 5 weeks ago, but it seems like this might be the year for me. This seems like this might be the year for John Rahm to just put himself back into the top spot, you know, for whether we're talking about the FedEx Cup or anything else. I just think this is a guy that looks like he's ready.
He's kind of plugged the short game issues. He's gained 7 strokes or more putting in 3 of his last 5 measured starts. He's got the 2 wins in Europe after the Tour Championship. So, Greg, if you're just one of these guys who flips on the PGA Tour and then kind of checks out for football season and comes back, you're probably not getting the full picture of how good John Rahm has been globally.
Yeah, that's that is accurate. But here's the question that I have. Is John Rahm, like, if you're just the general public and you look at John Rahm's record here, he's never finished outside the top 10. It's a phenomenal record. And he was second last year and shot 33 under, right? I mean, he played phenomenal golf. You have 3 top 10s in a row before that and another second place in 2018 in his first. So, I'm very curious. I don't know what ownership is going to be like for John Rahm. My guess would be very high. And I think players are going to, DFS players are going to go towards John Rahm. Whereas Scotty Scheffler was on such a high earlier in the year, does the general public think he's kind of been on the skids a little bit? Which, if you look at it, of course, there's a putting issue, as Sia mentioned, but I think it's far, far from the skids for Scotty Scheffler. So if ownership goes heavy to John Rahm, I'm happy to play Scotty, and I'm happy to skip this range altogether. And that will be an interesting, I'd like to see what kind of ownership projections we get. But John Rahm is the obvious play here if ownership isn't crazy high. But Scotty's ball striking is, he's proven to me that it's enough to be a viable option regardless of what happens with the putter. It seems like the putter is the key for him to win the tournament. And definitely not the key for him to contend and play well and earn a lot of DFS points.
Right. So that's kind of what's happening here, right? This really bad, I mean, really bad by his own standard putting stretch for Scotty Scheffler has not resulted in a victory, but it's got a couple of runner-up finishes, a bunch of top 10s because his tee to green play has been so good. He's also a dart thrower. So here's a couple of more stats we can throw at it this year. Opportunities. Those are birdie putts within 15 feet. Plus opportunities, those are birdie putts within 10 feet. Scotty Scheffler, last 36 rounds, better than anybody on plus opportunities, has given himself a lot of darts, second to only Tom Hoagie in standard opportunities, 15 feet or in. So he's giving himself a lot of opportunities. He's just going to have to start rolling it in eventually.
Yeah, and I could see that being a factor here. Where you also think about this course. I already compared it to in the slopes to Augusta National.
Right.
Scotty obviously played pretty well at the Masters last year.
I've heard.
And I know that it's a different test. I'm not comparing the two golf courses, but there is this kind of creative, imaginative style that seems to play out really well here. You hit it high, you hit it low if it's windy. You understand how to operate on these uneven lies. And there are very few better than Scotty in the game when it comes to those kind of things. So I could see this being a perfect fit for Scotty Scheffler. And my hope is that some people shy away because they're worried about the putter or what have you. And in that case, I'll jump all over it.
The nines. Absolutely jam-packed. Justin Thomas, $9,900. He's got 4 consecutive top 5 finishes here. Patrick Cantlay, 97. Xander Schauffele, 95. Colin Morikawa is 94. Then we round this whole thing out with Tony Finau, one of the hottest players on the planet, 9,300. And Matt Fitzpatrick, speaking of guys who never stopped playing golf, he never stopped playing golf. He's 9,100. So see, big names here for just a little bit cheaper than those guys at the top.
Yeah, there's so much to like here. I'll start with Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. I mean, I like them both. Cantlay's results, I mean, both of their results have been really, really good here. There's not a lot for me to criticize with either of them, although Cantlay hasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, he hasn't played much lately at all, right? He's been on a bit of a break.
Not since the Shriners.
Yeah.
since the 72nd hole debacle that ended in a runner-up finish at the Shriners.
Right.
That's right. So, I mean, I guess that would be the one strike against him, if you even want to call that a strike, just the lack of competitive golf. But I'm not going to, that's not a strike for me. So for me, it's Cantlay, it's Xander Schauffele. And the other guy I like, and you mentioned him, is Matt Fitzpatrick. I mean, he, like, again, he does everything well to the extent you want distance here. Matt Fitzpatrick, for those of you that don't know, has certainly added distance to his game, but he does everything well, from the short game to the approach game to off the tee. You know, looking at his approach on, if you're watching us on YouTube, it's not as solid perhaps as some of the guys that are in this range or in the 10K range. But I think Matt Fitzpatrick is a nice little value at 9,100. I don't know, from an ownership standpoint, I don't know where he will be sort of slotted compared to some of these other big names in the 9K range, but I would imagine he'd be, you know, on the more popular side.
Probably an opportunity to talk about experience, Greg. You mentioned it's kind of a creative course. You kind of maybe have to see the lines. Fitzpatrick going to be making his debut. There's another guy we're going to get to in a second, Tom Kim, also making his Tournament of Champions debut. They are 1-2 in strokes gained putting on Bermuda. So there's kind of this, you know, you've got two guys with really great skill sets, really good surfaces, but they've never seen this course in competition. How much do we worry about that?
Yeah, I don't worry about it too much.
Okay.
Now, there are dramatic shots, but I think the players in today's day and age understand how to adjust for elevation pretty quickly. And they study hard, but they don't have to study as hard as you used to. They kind of figure it out and they learn pretty quickly. And most of these guys out here, especially those who are playing in this tournament, are quick studies. But the interesting thing about the Bermuda thing is these Bermuda greens are typically a lot slower.
Yes.
And that's because they're a lot more undulating. There's a lot of shelves. There's a lot of slope in them and there's wind. So they can't get as fast. You think about a lot of the Bermuda green golf courses in, say, Florida. And I mean, they are pool tables, but there's not a ton of undulation to them. You get up to the Wyndham and you get into East Lake and you have some undulation and some speed as well. But most of the time, Bermuda greens are very fast. And in this case, they're very slow. So I take that with a grain of salt as well. It's a unique case of Bermuda grass greens. But I'm not worried about experience. Not really. I'm not really looking into it much.
Greg, I'll bounce this right back to you because I didn't really give you a chance on this 9K range. How would you like to assess this tier?
Well, I'm having a really hard time with JT, Cantlay, and Schauffele kind of deciphering between the three.
Okay.
Again, obviously curious how ownership will play out, but I think all three of those guys are very playable options depending on your build. But I also, the guy that I have circled who I feel like I got to get in my lineup is Tony Finau. And the reason is, one, the distance is one thing for sure, but he's played here three times. And if you look at his record here, he has he has one top 10. It's a T9, right? And in an event with less than 40 players just about every year, it's not really a great record. He has a T19, a T31, and a T9. But in all three of those events, he lost strokes putting. But if you look at what Tony Finau did entering this event, what he's done recently, it's just the opposite. And so to me, the thing that has plagued Tony Finau here has been the flat stick. And the flat stick is something that he has really changed and really improved on. And I don't believe it's just a hot streak. I think it's something that he really figured out and really improved on. So I'm very interested to see how Tony Finau plays. I think his game fits the golf course perfectly. And I'm very excited about what he's doing with the putter.
He's gained strokes putting in seven straight measured events. Doesn't include the Hero World Challenge, where he finished better than the field, seventh out of those 20 players. But yeah, you can kind of see right here around the match play is when he started to click with the flat stick. And he was a consistent gainer after that, after kind of punting a lot of strokes on the green at the start of the calendar year. So figured something out in March, and then obviously the trophies start pouring in.
Right. No surprise there.
No surprise there. The $8,000 range. More fascinating stuff. And then the value at the bottom of the board. We'll continue this conversation, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. Whew, look at these names. Will Zalatoris back in action. We're back. He's back, baby. 8,900. Cam Young, 88. Someone said, Cam Young's great, but how did he get into this field? I thought it was for champions only. No, they expanded this. Now, if you make the tour championship, you're also in. Tom Kim, 8,700. Max Homa, 86. Victor Hovland, fresh off victory, 85. And then the bottom of this range is Sam Burns, Sung J.M., Jordan Spieth, Hideki Matsuyama, and that pesky little Brian Harman. Sia Najad, the 8Ks are yours.
I love the potential. By the way, you kept saying back and Will Zalatoris, and I don't know if that was like a dig at his injury.
No. Herniated discs, by the way.
Herniated discs, which, by the way, he did not get surgery on those. Is that accurate?
You know what's so funny? Greg will know the answer. So here, I thought he did, and then I Googled it earlier, and I could not find it.
I don't believe he did.
They don't always need surgery, I've learned.
No, it's kind of, I don't want to, maybe controversial in the world of medicine, sports medicine, recovery, but they actually, the tendency for this kind of injury is that it will heal itself. Mm. It's a matter of how long it takes. So you got to rest.
It's time. Yeah.
Right. Impatient. Is it chronic? There are so many factors that come into play, but they generally don't need surgery.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny we mentioned it because I literally tried to find it this morning and I was like,
I did too.
I couldn't find a record of it.
And yeah. To me, so he didn't have surgery because it is controversial, Greg. I'll just kind of lean just for a second, a little aside here on my legal experience, because I was a trial attorney for 13 years, still an attorney. I just don't practice anymore, as you all know. And I poured over a lot of medical records over my time, whether it was preparing for depositions or preparing for trials. And a lot of them had to do with medical records. And herniations are kind of a big deal. The thing is, the controversy behind them is how to treat them. And also there's controversy in how to name them, because some herniations are deemed bulges by some doctors and they're deemed herniations by others. And those are two completely different things. To me, if you have multiple herniations, which he did, again, I don't want to make this like a medical opinion, but those usually get treated invasively with surgery. So to me, maybe the back injury isn't as serious as we thought because he's able to rehab it without it. So that would be kind of a check in his box in terms of me being fearful of it. But man, if you have herniations, it seems to me like you would be getting that fixed in the area in his lower back, in the area where he had them. But that's sort of, go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, so we can remember what Will Zalatoris did. He won in Memphis before withdrawing in Wilmington at the BMW championship. Three starts before that, it was three straight top 28. So he was playing well at the time that all this kind of happened.
Absolutely. And you know, for me, because I know he's been doing some rehab, and for the record, for whatever it's worth, he got married, I believe, like 4 weeks ago. So I, you know, there's a few guys that got married within the last 4 or 6 weeks. That was some.
Is that going to help or hurt?
That's going to hurt. It's a distraction. Just like having kids is a distraction. Listen, like these are things.
They're still in the honeymoon phase. They're still in the honeymoon phase.
But it's not about, no. So that's the thing with kids. It's a different analysis with kids and marriage. I'm not saying he's like it's bad to be married. I'm saying it's a distraction. It takes you away from your game. You got to prepare for weddings. You got to do so many things. And he's rehabbing his back. For the record, just in the last 6 weeks, Sung J.M., Will Zalatoris, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas have gotten married. I think that's weird that they all just got married at the same time. There might have even been more.
It's the off season. See, it's not weird. This is what golfers do. It's the off season.
You're not getting married in June.
Yeah.
You know,
not getting married the week of the U.S. Open.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Just still, there's only 39 people in this field and four superstars got married within like 3 weeks of each other. The point is, I'm not going to be on Will Zalatoris. The guys I like in this range, I like Cameron Young a lot. I just love his upside. I love his potential. His stats are a little checkered here as we, you know, compared to some of the guys in this range, I should say, as we pull this up on rickrungood.com. But I just love the game here. I love what he can do on approach. The putter can get hot and cold with him. Not a problem there. I like Victor Hovland a lot too. What's not to like? I think Sam Burns profiles well for this course, especially because he's so inaccurate off the tee. That's not going to hurt him here. And we know he can fire at pins. We know he can score. The guys I like the most are probably Cameron Young and Victor Hovland. And then I, you know, second place for me, silver medal for me is probably Tom Kim and Max Homa.
Sia said the magic word. He said upside when he was talking about Cam Young. Cam Young, last 50 rounds, has gained five or more strokes 14% of the time. The only guy better than that, Tony Finau, who's done it 16% of the time. That probably includes two wins for Tony in his last 50 rounds. So that is absolutely legit. Like, the high upside guys over the last 50 rounds are Tony Finau, Cam Young, John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Will Zalatoris. That's a pretty good group to be in.
And you know, the other thing about him, because Cam Young is of course on my list as well. This has a tendency of turning into a birdie fest, but it can also play difficult if it gets windy. I mean, you're not going to see anything close to even par. It's not that kind of difficulty, but it can play a different variety of difficulty based on the weather. And I love that Cam Young has the ability to adjust to all different kinds of tournaments, all different locations, all different styles. He's had success at all of them. I mean, everywhere from Scotland to at the Open Championship on a really
Harbortown
golf course.
Harbortown, he played great.
Harbortown, he plays great. He plays great at the Genesis at Riviera. He plays great at, what was it, the Sanderson Farms or something, you know, in Mississippi. Like, at every corner of the country, DC in the rain. When Cam Young, he's shown that he can handle all different kinds of circumstances, and you combine that with this upside, to me, it's a no-brainer.
Where else would you want to go, Greg? If it's not Cam Young.
Okay, this is my second choice, not on Sia's list. Well, not the list he just named, but he is on another list Sia mentioned, which is the marriage list.
Sungjae.
Yes. Sungjae Im. I love his record here. He's got a T8 last year, T5 the year before that. Two, I love what Sungjae can do with his iron play. His proximity to the hole is lethal. And I love what Sungjae Im does off the tee. So when I was looking at guys who finished in the top 10 in this event, the thread for me was really, really long stretches of strokes gained off the tee. Like that, like the one thing that stood out to me, and you could throw every grain of salt you want into it. Leading into this event, guys who finish in the top 10 have a great track record off the tee. And Sungjae has been, he's had it on a string off the tee. And I know you can hit it everywhere. I know all those points are valid, but I've noticed that really strong drivers of the ball have success here. And that's not all Sungjae's leaning on, which also helps.
14 straight events he's gained strokes off the tee. Get Hayden Buckley in this field. I think he's at 17 right now. Get him in this field.
I would love to see that, because that guy can strike. I can't wait to see what Hayden does this year.
It's going to be massive.
His approach game was pretty good too.
Real quick though, Sungjae's not a long hitter, right? I know off the tee is a combination of a couple different things, but this pristine record off the tee, it's not because of distance.
He's 47th in driving distance.
Oh, that's not bad.
215-ish?
Not long. That's what I would call long enough.
Yeah, no, that's longer than I thought. I thought he'd be in more like the 75-ish range. Fair enough.
Yep. Pretty good. In today's day and age, honestly, 75th is long enough too. They're just piling up there. But I love the game. I love seeing the gains. So, yeah, Sungjae is one of my favorite plays of the week.
Real quick, I am marveling at how you are navigating rickrungood.com right now.
Thank
Rick.
You.
There's so much like more content that I have yet to discover on this website.
Yeah,
that you're just kind of flashing for like 5 seconds at a time. This is truly intriguing.
Yeah, I made some updates in the off season, and I injected a lot more data. So I'm like trying to make sure, you know, I can get through all of it and give the little nuggets as we go through.
Damn show off. So yes, we'll see.
Here's Victor, won the Hero World Challenge, and Greg, I'll bounce this back to you because I think this is a discussion we had around the Open Championship. This concept of large greens and greens that, I mean, the green and regulation percentage at the Plantation course is like 85%. I mean, it's off the charts. Just absolutely removes the weakest part of Victor's game. Now, it might not lend itself, I mean, these wide fairways where he probably prefers long and narrow where he can kind of extend there. But I believe there is kind of something to slower undulating greens, might be a little bit easier to read. Slower greens can kind of give you a little bit of margin for error. He's not going to have to chip. He's not going to have to pitch as much. Like, am I on to something here?
Absolutely. And here's the other thing. Think about the courses that Vic has had great success on.
Yeah.
Right. What kind of greens are they? Typically Paus Palum. Now, the one difference is they're usually not as slopey. But my favorite aspect for Victor this week is, believe it or not, his aggressive style with the iron. I mean, he leaves no flag.
No.
On there's no mercy on the flag stick when he's got the golf club in his hands. He hits it right at it. And these greens, as big as they are, they're also sectioned. So you got to get it into the right area to, you know, access those really good opportunities. And Victor absolutely checks that box.
$8,500 for Victor, right in the middle of that range. Anybody else that we need to talk about in the eights before we, I mean, we didn't even talk about Tom Kim. Tom Kim's won twice in his last like seven starts. Max Homa, talk about brand new perspective from
it's
Max.
It's a strong range.
It's a really strong range, right? Is there anything
I mentioned Tom Kim and Max Homa. I mean, I didn't talk much about them. I mean, obviously, you know, not a lot of experience, particularly from any experience from Tom Kim. I love him. I mean, I think the distance part might have his ownership, just conventionally, I might have his ownership a little lower than it should be. And the fact that he's never played this course. I think a couple interesting names, though, and as I know we see it here, the ball striking is just absolutely insane.
Stupid good.
Disturbing.
I think there are three guys that I am very curious to see how they play. And it's Fitzpatrick, Kim, and Homa. Mm-hmm. And in that group, those three guys are somewhat comparable to me. They're great ball strikers and they're great drivers of the golf ball, but they don't necessarily, you know, blow you away with distance. And is that going to play here? I think it has a really good chance to. I mean, I don't know which one I like most, but I could see, you know, someone like Tom Kim, who's such a good long iron player. I mean, I could see distance being a, you know, minuscule disadvantage for him.
One thing to note is we just went through almost the entire 8K range, and we even went through it with the thought of, hey, we probably forgot some people. And we didn't even mention Jordan Spieth or Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah.
I just find really interesting. And I don't want to play them either, but it's just interesting. None of us brought them up. People generally aren't going to want to play those guys. And I just wonder if that is maybe the edge from an ownership standpoint. Listen, I don't want to play them either, but you got to get a little clever and creative from an ownership standpoint in a 39-person field. And I just wonder if those guys get overlooked enough to actually have an advantage to play them.
What's Hideki's deal? I mean, he did not have a good 2022. Spieth at least gave us like the 5-0-0 at the President's Cup, right? And like gave us that moment, but he also hasn't been very good. These are two kind of bizarre situations.
Yeah. And that's the hardest part for me is the difficulty to read it. I mean, Hideki has played really well here before, not the last two trips, but before that, I mean, he's got a strong record. He's finished second. He's finished tied third. He's finished fourth. So look, the problem for me with these guys is you're guessing to a degree,
yeah,
which I understand that play when it comes to game theory, like Sia was just talking about. But when it comes to the analysis, I don't really like guessing where somebody is going to be at after a break.
The one other thing, Rick, real quick that I'll mention is I think there is a sort of a talent gap, perhaps at that 8,300 level, or maybe you want to include Spieth and Hideki there. I mean, that certainly would make sense. It's just their recent form that is the only reason I'm bridging the gap there. But you know, when you look at this, because we talked about during the fall swing, and Rick, I know you had a couple of podcasts on this, where just from a betting standpoint, it's those top guys that tend to win. It's like this is what's been happening, especially with the live thing happening. Like, we're going to see a lot of these guys at the shorter odds winning. What's really interesting from building a lineup from a DFS standpoint is that, to me, there's not a huge gap. Listen, of course, you can put Scotty and John Rahm in a tier of their own. I get it. But there's not a huge gap from 10,300 to 8,300, in my opinion. I think the upside begins at 8,300 in terms of percentage chance to win a tournament. I understand it's a sliding scale, but Matt Fitzpatrick at 9,100, Cameron Young at 8,800, Victor Hovland at 8,500, Scotty Scheffler, John Rahm all the way up at the top. My point in saying all of this is you can build your lineup in such a way where balance is still building with elite, elite guys that can win. So it's just something to think about. You don't have to jam in, you know, the 10K guy or a couple high 9K guys if you don't want to. You can kind of just be different because, you know, that's what all everybody else is doing.
Strokes gained Hawaii. That would be Century Tournament of Champions, Sony Open. I was trying to cherry pick the best I could for Hideki. I think I got it. Last 8 years, so back to 2016, there are two golfers who have played at least, call it 30 rounds in Hawaii and have gained at least a stroke per round. One, Justin Thomas, handful of wins, and Hideki Matsuyama is the other one. The win at the Sony last year, a couple of good finishes here. That's where we're building from.
It helps. That's strokes for sure.
Strokes gained. I was trying to think of something better than Hawaii, but I couldn't think of it.
But aloha.
Sure. Hey, there you go. Strokes gained aloha. Yeah, there we go. Now we're cooking with gas. The sevens. This is where I do think there is kind of like a drop off in this field, right? Like, anybody in the 8K can win it. The sevens, maybe I have some question marks. Billy Horschel, Corey Connors, Russell Henley, Adam Scott, Keegan Bradley. That's the top half. Bottom half, Aaron Wise, Sahith Tagala, Seamus Power, Sepp Straka, KH Lee. I don't know whose turn it is, Greg. We'll just start with you.
So this is, you know, the talent drop off is interesting because obviously most of these guys won last year, but and they have the potential, but these are guys we typically like when we see signs, right? We see Aaron Wise play well for 10 events in a row and we jump on board. But above that, you have the guys, many of whom we just talked about, where it, you know, it doesn't matter how long they take off. We expect great things from them because that's what they've shown us in the past. So I think there's a lot of potential here, but this is also where it starts to feel like, you know, I may like a guy, but he might come in last. There's that. The other side of the equation is much more in play down here. That being said, I think my favorite play in the 7K range is Keegan Bradley.
Yeah. Interesting. Mine too, by the way. Surprisingly, sorry.
Wow, Keegan. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very interested in Keegan. One, I really like what I'm seeing off the tee with him. Again, it's that long streak off the tee. And again, not a deciding factor, but I think there's really something to this. When you get down here, there are a lot of guys where the driver starts to slip compared to the guys in the higher price ranges. So I love that. I also love what Keegan's done with the putter. I love the confidence that he brings in off the Zozo. I know we haven't seen him in a while, but I have a feeling this could be a really good fit for Keegan.
Three starts in the fall. T5 in Jackson, win at the Zozo, T21 at the CJ Cup. That's pretty tough to beat. That's a hell of a fall.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a phenomenal fall. It's phenomenal. And he's gained strokes putting in his last two, at least two strokes in each one. And he's played well here before too. He came in tied fourth. It was way back in 2013. But, you know, I think he may have answered the putting question to some degree, enough for me to really like him, especially at 7,500.
Here's the real Greg Ducharme trivia question. So he played this event in 2013. I do not know the answer. I will scroll down and find the answer.
What did he win?
What did he win in 2012 to get into this? I don't know the answer, but I'll scroll.
I feel like it was the AT&T Byron Nelson.
So, okay. I know for sure he won a playoff event at some point.
That was right? in, I think that was more 2017.
Recent. Yeah, that was more recent.
That was at Aronimic against Justin Rose.
Yeah. So what would he have won in 12? You think it was like a Byron Nelson?
Yeah, like it, HP. Was it sponsored by HP or something?
That might be the right answer. See, do you have it? I have zero idea what he won in 20.
No, Crown but that was, Plaza Invitational would be another guess.
That's such a good one. Yeah, or like the JCPenney Open. Yeah.
No, I don't have anything here, but Greg looked at the camera like, yeah, I know my stuff. It was very subtle, but if you rewind like 15 seconds, I was impressive, Greg. The
playoff. I don't know what you're talking about, but tell me.
It was the WGC FedEx St. Jude.
Mm. Oh wow, that doesn't seem right.
August of 2012. Right. So wait, he's won a WGC and a playoff event.
So WGC. So that was what? That was the Bridgestone. That was the Bridgestone then.
Yeah. So so here you go. So he did win the HP Byron Nelson, but it was the year prior. So
oh, okay.
That was 2011. Then he won the PGA Championship same year. Then he won WGC. If we were doing this podcast in August of 2012, we would have been like, holy crap, Keegan Bradley has just won three events in 14 months, a WGC and a major.
Yeah. And Tiger isn't playing. It's all Keegan.
And mm-hmm. and he's like king of team no putt. Like, let's go.
That's a good point. Although he could putt back then. He was pretty good back then.
When was the ban? When was the
like 2014 ban? Or something?
Yeah.
So some players started early. Yeah. That was like the kind of the last, maybe 2013, it started to shift.
Keegan Bradley gained 9 strokes putting at the Genesis in 2012.
Wow.
And that was the midst of gaining in 7 straight events. So he could putt back then.
Wow.
What a world.
Wow.
Sorry, C. I think I derailed us there, but I'm looking for 7K golfers that can make an impact on your fantasy lineups this week.
And I'm looking to be derailed. I like Keegan Bradley. Part of the reason I liked Keegan Bradley is because my assumption is, you know, buttressed up against guys like Adam Scott, Aaron Wise, who's, you know, obviously a popular name these days to hit the gala. I feel like he might get left out a little bit. Now, left out needs to be contextualized. It's a 39-person field. Everybody's going to have some ownership. But I think Keegan is sneaky because I think ownership's going to travel to guys like Adam Scott and Aaron Wise. And for the record, I do like Aaron Wise as well. I just wonder how popular he's going to be at that price. Very solid fall swing. We know he can play. His weakness, I believe, is just the accuracy off the tee, which isn't going to be a problem. His game is super well-rounded. So I think Aaron Wise makes a lot of sense. But again, I think he's going to be a little popular, which is why I liked Keegan. Another guy I like that might be a little less popular, maybe, who also had a great fall swing, is Seamus Power. So again, I'm trying to get guys that I think have potential, but also might be at least a few percentage points less popular than some of these better names.
If you like small sample sizes, Seamus Power is for you. Okay. Nice. Last 12 rounds, just 12. Don't go to 13. Just 12. don't go any further. Seamus Power, best player in this field. 2.71 strokes gained per round. Better than John Rahm. Better than Scottie Scheffler, Greg. It was a win. And then he backed it up with like a T5 and a T3.
And some of it was I guess that's counting strokes gained total.
That's just strokes gained total.
Okay. So you do get those events in there. Yeah. I mean, look, it's really hard to argue with that.
You can't argue with the math, Greg. That's actually, it's factual.
You can't. And is there a similarity to Bermuda? Some degree? Coastal kind of golf course? I know Bermuda's short and this is extremely long, but you know, it might look similar on TV. Is that worth anything?
Yeah, he might say, hey, I'm at another resort. Let me go win this.
I don't think Seamus Power is a bad play at all. I mean, you can't argue with the last 12-round success. But on a more serious note, he's a really solid player, and I think his game will fit. But I have one other guy I'm curious about.
Sure.
Very curious about. I never get him right. He's right above Seamus Power. What do we think about Sahith?
So can I tell you why you never get him right? This is such a good example of like there's a million ways to get it done in golf or a lot of different ways. So this is why you never get him right, because he never gets it. Like, okay, so let's look at this together.
So you're saying it's his fault.
Yeah, it's 100% his fault. So I'll do the last 36 rounds. That'll show you what I'm looking at here. All right. So
strokes gained distribution. He gains five or more strokes to the field as often as Patrick Cantlay does. His upside, his ceiling, his ceiling is Patrick Cantlay. He does it 11% of the time. The problem is he only gains strokes, any of them at all, like half the time, which means his floor is like JJ Spawn and his ceiling is like Patrick Cantlay. So it is, it's clear why you get him wrong a lot, because everybody gets him wrong a lot.
All right. Well, that's an interesting conversation. But I wonder, especially Sia, I know you're not as worried about the driving accuracy. It seems to be a weakness when I watch him play. It seems like, and this would speak to that kind of that high floor and or the low floor and high ceiling. What do you make of that, Sia?
I think he's a good play. I mean, I definitely think he's a good play. I think part of the reason I'm going a different direction, my guess is he's going to be really popular. I think some of these younger guys like Aaron Wise and Sahith Theegala, people just really want to get a piece of those guys and be on the front end of it as opposed to, you know, the back end or the middle. So I just think Sahith is probably going to be pretty popular, but I think he's a great play. I think this is certainly a decent course. The only other guy I want to bring up here who I don't think a lot of people are going to pay attention to, but I noticed him come up on, Rick, your list when you were looking at the 5+ strokes gain metric. KH Lee is peppered throughout that list. And he is not the conventional player that you would think would be great on this course, but at a flat 7,000, he's probably going to get relatively ignored. Again, relatively ignored. I think KH Lee is a pretty smart play in this one.
Yeah, it's kind of similar. It's like when he plays well, he plays really, really well. And when he plays poorly, it's just like, well, it's not worth it. Adam Scott was on there too. So we're still in the sevens. Adam Scott has flashed a lot of upside as of late. He's 7,600 bucks. So there are a couple of guys. And I think out of this range, you're looking for someone to pop. And there are a couple of guys that give you that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The sixes, the bottom of the board, Mackenzie Hughes, JT Poston, Scott Stallings. We don't know which one. $6,600. Tom Hoagie. You like that? Tom Hoagie, Adam Svensson, Ches Reavie, JJ Spawn, Luke List, Trey Mullinax, Ryan Brem, Chad Ramey. What event did Chad Ramey win to get into this?
The Puerto Rico Open. No. Corrales Punta Cana Championship. He won in the Dominican, right?
I think that's right.
I think it was Corrales.
Yeah. Ryan Brem won the Barracuda.
He won the Puerto Rico Open.
Trey Mullinax won the Barracuda.
Trey Mullinax.
I clearly do not know who won the Barracuda. It was it Trey Mullinax?
Yes.
Okay.
I Luke believe. List? I'm Luke not as List? Confident on Trey Mullinax. I'm backing off.
Do you know which one Luke List won?
The Farmers.
Yeah, that was almost a year ago. Come up. Yeah, okay. So here they are. I think there's 2.5 interesting names, Sia.
Okay, well, one is going to be pretty popular, I think, and that's Tom Hoagie. Is that one of the 2.5?
For sure. Yes. Okay. That's a strong one of the 2.5. Yes.
And I do think I know some of your low-end golfer preferences. That's not meant to be disrespectful to the people on this list. Mackenzie Hughes, is he one of the other ones?
Mackenzie Hughes is the other hole, yes. So we're looking for the half now.
I have Mackenzie Hughes with a question mark next to it.
We'll talk about him. Who's the half?
The half? So I have a guy I like, and I wonder if he's the half, but I don't think he is. The guy I like in this range, and I'm hoping this is the guy, because you could be thinking JT Poston, but I'm thinking it's Scott Stallings.
We haven't named him. I don't know which Scott Stallings is going to show up. The guy who accidentally got the invite or the guy that's supposed to get the invite?
I think I know the half.
Okay.
Oh, I know. Go ahead, Greg.
Luke List?
No,
it's Trey Mullinax. My
no.
bad. What?
It's Adam Svensson. Svensson.
That's a good one. Okay, fair enough.
I overthought it.
Yeah, that was too much. Luke List, since that win, has played like 20 events and has just hemorrhaged strokes in like 17. He has his best finish in like 25 starts since the win is, it's like T19. It's just
go to his page and tell me that's not a half. He is Luke half List? Good. Half of it's pretty good. Half of it is terrible.
The problem is what, like half of it's not going to matter, right? Like we don't care how far he drives it. And he's obviously like one of the worst putters on the planet.
Yeah. You're right. Wow. I'm not playing.
It is.
Don't worry.
Half good.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah. Anyway, shameful.
Mackenzie Hughes was just that. Like, I'm just pretty bullish on him long term. I mean, he had a great fall, right? He had the win at Sanderson. He had T23 at the Zozo, T16 in Houston, and he gained strokes at the RSM Classic and missed the cut, which is like a wonky thing that can happen when you have two courses running. So like, he didn't even play all that poorly to miss the cut in Sea Island. Like, he had a very good fall. A T25 at the Fortinet. Like, I just think that he's going to have a better year, like one of his best years coming up.
He was kind of gaining a little bit of distance too, which is why I had a question mark next to him. Do we think that's going to be an issue? I could see it. I have my doubts. It doesn't seem like a great golf course for him. You know, I know he won the Sanderson Farms, but I think of Mackenzie Hughes as a guy that does really well when it's really tough.
So do I.
You know, and that's the one thing that kind of holds me back on him.
Okay.
But Hoagie, I'm all about. You showed the stat earlier that he was, right?
Yeah.
With the dart throwing.
He's such a dartist. So here you go. plus opportunities. So this is birdie putts 10 feet or closer. He gets four around. Now, when you normalize that and say, okay, depending on course difficulty, he actually gains about 2/3 of a plus opportunity per round, which is second to only Scottie Scheffler. So it's just saying he's giving himself a lot of birdie looks, a lot of.
Yeah. And that gives him upside, right? In a 6K range where that talent level, the risk factor definitely goes down. If you didn't believe it in the 7K, it definitely does here. And he's got to be the highest upside guy in the 6Ks.
Yeah. Also the highest owned guy in the 6Ks. So just keep that in mind. He definitely
absolutely
will be, which is why, and this is a secret that I'm only going to tell you two. So come closer to your earpiece, lean forward. It's a bit. Scott Stallings. That's your pivot off of Tom Hoagie. You're welcome, everybody.
He
can get hot. Scott can get hot, and we're not that far removed from him getting hot. It was just last summer, August.
Well, he was great, and then he was horrible at the Tour Championship, but has he played better as of late? No. Yeah, he's played a little bit better, right? T23 in Sanderson, made three cuts after that, or I guess two of them are no-cut events. But, I mean, he was awesome, and he almost kind of won in Wilmington. And he was awesome during that stretch and then kind of punted at the Tour Championship. But he's getting it back on track. I don't mind this.
I don't mind it either. And I prefer it to like a Ches Reavie. I probably prefer it to Mackenzie Hughes. Prefer it to JT Poston. I know you like Mackenzie.
I mean, I don't need to go to battle on this.
But I agree.
I kind of like him. All right. I believe so. This speaking of bits, this one little bit that we've been doing, and Sia, you've kind of been curating all of these, is this idea of these strokes gained narratives, where how would you describe this? People send in lineups based on the location, the sponsor, some pop culture reference that's going on, right? How would you describe this?
Yeah, there's a tournament every week, as we know, for the next, what did you say, Rex? 34 weeks?
34 right? weeks in a row.
And for every tournament, there's, like you said, there's a location, there's a sponsor, there's something you can identify with. And whatever you identify with that particular course, a lot of people will make a narrative. They will make a lineup off of whatever that identity is. And so there's a lot of fun lineups that come in week to week. And there are actual lineups that you can play, but I wouldn't advise it. But it's just a fun little thing to kind of informalize some of these golf shows, right? We have just kind of a fun side of it. And you people get really creative. We've had some songs. We've actually raised some money for charity that spawned from all this, that JJ spawned from all of this. So I think it's actually grown a life of its own. And I think that's really cool.
So this all happened very quickly this year, and I believe we have one for this week, but I will tell you, it's a good one to have because it's from the GOAT, John Markowski. Do we have that? We do. So if you're looking to figure out like what the heck is a strokes gain narrative, here it is. This is from John. He says, I have a lot of ROM for improvement in 2023. The list is quite ambitious. I want to win a power lifting competition, spawn a strokes gain narrative YouTube channel, guest star on The Young and the Restless, and get a hoagie named after me at Wawa. Happy New Year's, fellas. Happy New Year to you, John. That's is a strokes gain narrative. If you were paying attention, it's Rahm, List, Power, Spawn, Young, and Hoagie rounding out that lineup.
And of course, the narrative is the resolution, which I love. Right. I love the concept. So yeah, he's the GOAT. You know, he would never miss one. Thanks, John. Happy New Year.
Yep. Happy New Year, John.
If you could get a Hoagie named after you at Wawa, John, I'll be really impressed by that.
Epic.
That's good stuff. I'll fly back east and get one if you can make it happen. Good stuff. All right, gents. Yeah. Anything else? So we've got Mega Preview Pod tomorrow, which I guess I could just look before I guess. I think it's do we do 5 Eastern or 5:30 Eastern? I think it's 5 Eastern.
I think it's 5.
5 Eastern Mega Preview Pod. We will tweet out tonight the form for you, the fans, to submit your one and done selection. So that you can try to beat us. Good luck with that. And then we'll have both Kyles presumably on tomorrow to discuss the picks and the bets and all that fun stuff, storylines along the way. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I can't wait for this event. I am so happy to be back. You guys invigorate me every time. So I'm fired up. Let's go.
Week 1 of 34.
I just saw a Twitter interaction that so coach is tweeting out something and someone replied, "Shove it, nerd," which I just thought to the coach, which is just like such a great "shove it, nerd."
How about that? I didn't expect to hear that. There are a lot of unexpected twists and turns on this first cut episode.
I would not say that to the coach's face. Maybe I would tweet at him though. I don't know.
You could say that to us. I mean, any of us way more nerd than coach.
I'd be thrilled if somebody called me a nerd and told me to shove it. I'd be like, "Thank you. Let's get married. I love it."
Retweet.
I'm on with coach at 7:30 for Monday Night Football, and I'm going to just throw in the word nerd and see if that's
I'm going to shove it, nerd. That's so good. All right. Producer Troy does all the hard work behind the scenes. Greg Ducharme available at The Real GFD. Sia Najad at Sia Najad. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Sunday after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so's
okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.